Hello and welcome one and all back to another broadcast or Unbox broadcast where we help leaders unbox the power and the potential of their leadership. Today, we're going to be talking about the leader's responsibility in creating a healthy workplace culture. Stick around.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended John Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
Hello and welcome back, one and all. R.P. Soriano here with the incomparable Dr. Robert Davis.
Hey, man, good to be here.
I know you're not used to getting those kinds of compliments thrown your way. So every once in a while, I feel I've got to build you up. I'm trying to create what we call a healthy workplace culture.
Yes. I'm used to being called an I word, but it's not incomparable. It's usually, it starts with IMB.
Oh, you must be married. Married to my wife. All right, man. Well, here we are. We've had some great shows. At least in my opinion, we have some great shows. The one last week was really, really good with our interview with Beth Yoey. I hope people have had a chance to check that out. I thought it was a really great show. I felt like it was a masterclass in leadership. Did you feel that way?
I really did. She really gets what we're going to be talking about today. And some of the points that she brought out, we're going to be highlighting today on how we create a healthy workplace culture and the leader's responsibility. What are they responsible for in making that happen? So I'm excited about today's subject.
That's great. Well, I hope if you haven't had a chance to check that broadcast out, be sure to find it. It's on LinkedIn, Facebook, and other platforms. But also be sure to like, subscribe, and share what you experience here today. It really helps with the show and gives us a good sense of the content that we should be providing you. So we're talking about a healthy workplace culture or the leader's responsibility for a healthy workplace culture. This is becoming a very important topic, especially around the issues of mental health in the workplace. I don't need to go on and on and on about what the world has experienced over the last 3 years, but we all know that things have kind of been turned on their head. However, this issue of a healthy workplace environment addressing mental, it's not a new phenomenon. It's not anything new. This has been an issue for years in the workplace. And we often hear, Robert, about creating healthy workplaces. And I think we all grasp and understand that this is important. But a lot of times we're left with the, okay, what do I do now? I mean, how do I go about doing that? What is my responsibility as a leader? I hear you talking about that we need a healthy workplace, but you know, What's the magic sauce? What's the formula? How do I go about doing that?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that you said is that we've always known this, but especially in this particular time in our history where people are just not accepting as much as it relates to how workplaces function and operate. For instance, just the way that, that women are treated. You know, again, the last time I referenced the Mad Men era, where, you know, you could talk to women, treat women, harass and victimize women any way you wanted to. That's just no longer acceptable. And so, you know, I think that for some, there's this paradigm shift. For others, there is this desire to grow and to mature. And then people have additional options. You know, after the Great Resignation that just took place, people are exercising the options. And I think more and more leaders are trying to think through and figure out, what do I need to do to be a catalyst for creating a healthy workplace culture? And I hope that today's subject will assist leaders in that endeavor.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think that's the goal here, is to kind of talk through not only the I think the cultural shift that we're seeing, but also the what is involved in culture change. And we're talking about change management here to some degree, right? And a lot of that also involves people's unwillingness to change, unwillingness to accept a culture change. So I think we'll kind of push through both of those things, the reality of the current culture and also the reality of the, I guess, the holdouts or the people who, you know, this stuff is not easy. A lot of times people will come to work and they're not expecting to or wanting to change, whether it's technology or whether it's relationships, whatever the case may be. They just kind of want to just be on autopilot and do the work the way that they've done it since they began. They don't want to learn anything new. So that's also something that we have to consider because it's the, you know, culture change is not an easy thing. So what we want to focus on today, if I'm correct, is what is the leader supposed to do? What is the leader's responsibility in not only, I guess, steering the ship, but getting people on the boat, building consensus.
I'm sorry about that. One of the things that we also have to take into consideration when we talk about creating a culture is that there are some individuals who will follow the policies and practices that are outlined in the handbook and in the job description, but in their heart, they don't actually subscribe to it. You know, one of the things that we're constantly being surprised about is just the level of racism that we still see in our society. I think about the woman who called the police on the bird watcher in New York. Based off of what they described as her job, I am sure that in her workplace, she knew the exact words and the phraseology to say, but in her heart, she had not internalized those principles. And the reason that is important is because too often as leaders, we focus on how do we change the members of our team. And so what I really want us to think about today and something that, you know, we really look at and unbox all the way around is how do I focus on me? How do I focus on the way that I'm showing up, on the way that I am articulating myself, my vision, et cetera. We can't change others. But the good thing is we can change ourselves and we can improve how we lead and we can create a much stronger culture. And to be honest with you, one of the things that will happen, and I know our listeners are ready for us to get into some of these points, but I just want to kind of set this up just a little bit more. One of the things that will happen is when you create a certain culture in the workplace, there are individuals who will remove themselves. I'm just going to be honest with you. Yeah. There are individuals who do not, will not appreciate the direction that the organization is going. And so I just want to say to leaders, even though it's not the main point, you have to be somewhat prepared for somewhat of a resignation within your organization of people who say, hey, listen, I've been able to hide my sexism and racism, xenophobia for all these years. And now, you know, the new culture that you're creating is not going to allow me to continue to do that. You know, deuces, I'm gone. I don't want to really be a better person. I just want to keep my job and I'm not going to sit here and take this. So we have to think through some of these things as leaders when we're implementing and when we're making changes within ourselves that will impact the organization.
Can I just add on to that? And I'm really going to try to add on and not just repeat. I want to bring some value to that. But leaders, we do, right? That's why we lead. It's here's the initiative, here's the goal, let's go. And these unintended consequences, which is kind of what you're describing, are the things that we need to be mindful of. And I'm glad that you brought that up about how some people will just remove themselves. They'll either remove themselves or they'll become more toxic as well. And just to, not to go any further on this, but that is what you have to kind of be prepared for. I don't think you anticipated in a way to where you automatically pick out who is going to be your problem or who you think is going to leave. But I think you go into it knowing that, yes, I'm excited about this culture change. I'm excited about trying to create as a leader, about trying to create a healthy workplace. It's great for the environment. It's great, the work environment. It's great for my department. It's great for everyone. but everyone's not going to immediately embrace it. And sometimes that has to do with not understanding, not being clear of what their role is, not being clear on what you're actually trying to do. Sometimes it is that people are very clear on what you're trying to do. And like you said, they just don't want any part of it. So, you know, there's a lot of walking before you even get to the base of the mountain. So that's something to consider. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think, again, we get the playbook, we run the play, and then we're confused. Why did my quarterback get sacked? And it's because there's a defense out there playing against you. You know, it isn't just you running the plays. You know, it works great in practice.
Everything does. Yeah.
Right. But game time is a whole different thing.
And you hit the nail right on the head. But a lot of leaders, unfortunately, are fearful of losing strong team members and competent team members. And so they're willing to be flexible with their principles, to put it mildly. And so one of the things that, as you become more clear about the direction that you want to go as a leader, and clear about about how you want the organization, the atmosphere and environment, and culture is the word we love to use, but it's the atmosphere, the environment that takes place in your workplace. You know, sometimes people are not going to want to be a part of that. And I hope that leaders, especially as we get into some points about, you know, less anxiety, I hope that leaders can be calmer and more accepting of allowing team members to go where they believe that they are, you know, where they can be most effective and can be their best selves.
All right, let's dive into just a couple of strong points here before we get into these seven points. Can you talk a little bit, discuss a little bit about what you mean by, I know you one of the things that's important to you is helping leaders develop the skill of being of best thinking. Can you talk just briefly about that? Why is that important to the culture change piece?
Yeah. So before I jump into that, let me just set this up a little bit. You know, when we talk about what is the responsibility of the leader to creating a healthy workplace culture, one of the things I think about is kind of like the analogy of a pizza, because I love to eat. I guess that's pretty obvious. And
it's not obvious.
We know what a great pizza tastes like. One of the challenges is we don't necessarily know what ingredients go into a great pizza and actually how to make a great pizza. I used to work for a place in Washington, D.C., where it was a phenomenal Italian pizzeria, and all of the ingredients were freshly made. And I learned how to make deep dish from scratch and hand toss. I used to do the whole twirling the pizza in the air. I used to have that skill. I need to start working back on it again. But then I got to understand what actually goes into making a great crust, what actually goes into making a great sauce and a great pizza. And so one of the things that we need to understand is what actually goes into, what does a leader have to actually do to create a healthy culture? And as you just mentioned, the first thing, and we're going to actually put all seven up on the screen. The very first one is that a leader has to be intentional. And I thank you for saying this. A leader has to be intentional to engage in best thinking. And when I say that, what we mean is there's actually a skill set, Raphael, that thinkers have. There are actually practices that they do to get their minds in a place where they can think. And I'm going to throw out one of my favorite resources, and this book will lead you to other books, and Way Leads On to Way, and that is Thinking for a Change. I believe it's by John C. Maxwell. It is just an unbelievable book that talks about the discipline of thinking, the actual science and the discipline of thinking and the various aspects of thinking and how a leader gets to a place where they actually become deeper, stronger, more intentional thinkers. And so if you want to create a healthy workplace culture, one of the things is to actually engage in best thinking, to be intentional, to say, you know what? I want to make sure that I am developing the skills to be a great thinker. And one of the things, Raphael, and you introduced me to this was the practice of mindfulness. And I remember our conversations, and I'm going to kind of let you probably elaborate on it a little bit more. But I remember you talking to me about how important meditation was and how important my practicing the various skills of mindfulness were in order to improve. And I know you have certain regimens that you use in order to be more mindful. So I'm just going to let you take it over from here.
Well, yeah, thank you. Mindfulness practice is a complete practice. So there's time on the mat, right? Where the reason why you're on the mat is because, or the meditation cushion or the chair or wherever you are, is because you're trying to give yourself as a distraction-free environment as much as possible. Outward, it's distraction. Because inwardly, if you've ever had a chance to spend some time with your own mind, in meditation practice, we call it monkey mind. And if you've ever experienced very active and excited monkeys, you'll realize that I mean, they're just all over the place. And a lot of times that's how our mind and our thinking and our conversations are. But the time on the mat gives you a chance to observe and to be aware of that. And the reason why you need to be aware of that is because when you're in your dynamic situation, when you're in the workplace, when you're working with your team, that monkey mind is running around in the background. And the first thing you need to realize, you need to be aware of that. You need to know that, wow, when I'm engaging with other people, I still have this kind of way of thinking and way internal way of thinking going on. And I need to be aware of when that is happening and how that is happening. A lot of times it's jumping to conclusions, thinking that you already know what someone is going to say, reading or misreading signals when you're engaging with people, all of these kinds of things happen. But, you know, the important thing about mindfulness practice is how it's reps, it's practice, right? So that when you get into your engaging with people and relationships, and you're trying to change culture, you're aware of the way that you think and you are remembering that. You know, there's another the last point that I want to make on that. We talked earlier about intention, about what your intentions are. And you referenced the young lady who called the police on the African-American guy in the park who was just bird watching. You know, you made the analogy that you're sure that at work she was following the policies and procedures as they were written. But in her mind, she had no intention of probably doing that. I don't want to jump to two conclusions. Maybe she just had a bad day, you know, because that can happen as well. But
that was a really bad day.
That was a really bad day. So, but conventionally speaking, I think we're speaking to the point here. We're talking about culture change. You have to be aware of what your intentions are. You have to be aware because you cannot hide that forever. It eventually will come out. But the more you're aware of what your intentions are, and being able to face that. If we're saying, hey, we need to create a healthy workplace culture, and we're going to create a culture that is free of racism, free of bigotry, free of sexism, and you in your mind don't want that, you know, you don't see the value in that, you need to be able to be honest with yourself. Mindfulness practice helps you to do that. It helps you to say, okay, you know, I don't want that change. Let me explore that more. Let me not judge it. Let me not judge it, and let me not excuse it. Let me get to the bottom of this. And that's typically what you know, the mindfulness practice and a lot of what, when we talk about mindfulness at Unbox to Lead, that's the approach that we take.
And there are so many resources. You turned me on to one phenomenal book, and I'm not going to do a bunch of promoting of books here.
We should put those links up though to those books on the, so that people can still be able to access them. We'll try to do that once we post
the show. I think
that's
a great idea. There's some great audio books that have two parts to it. One, teaching and explaining what mindfulness is, and then the other part is actually guided mindfulness exercises, mm-hmm. which are just phenomenal. And we'll drop some of those in the links so that you can have access to them. And one of the reasons why I want to just throw this in there before we move on, one of the reasons why thinking is so important is because when you really analyze it, a large portion, if not the majority of what a leader does, is problem solve. That's what the majority of what a leader does. They problem solve organizational/productivity problems. And the second thing that they do is they problem solve interpersonal relationship problems, which often contribute to productivity problems, et cetera. But right. they're constantly analyzing what's wrong, what can be done better, how can we make improvements, how can we grow, how can we be more effective? And in order to really answer those questions, you have to kind of identify what are some of the barriers to effectiveness, to productivity, to growth, et cetera. And then to really think through as a leader, how do I actually bring about, you know, change or bring about improvement? And so that's why thinking skills are so important. And I cannot overemphasize this. Well, the first one up there is just how important it is for leaders to practice good thinking individually.
And to give those, and I think that's one of your points here, is to give those tools or to help your team to have those tools as well. You talk about dealing with interpersonal challenges. So if you have two people on your team and they are not working well together, you can have a conversation with them. And that's usually what we end up doing, right? We have a conversation or we put it back on them to solve it and figure it out. And a lot of times we hope that that's the end of it, but it just continues. Most times it just continues to spiral into dysfunction and all the things that you've talked about in the past, the cutting off, the, we see this all the time. People cut off, people become, there's another word I'm looking for here, but they basically become passive aggressive, all of these behaviors, and they affect productivity. But giving an opportunity or helping your team get access to this to those skills of being able to think, you know, to practice best thinking is also extremely important. We can't just tell them, figure it out, work on it, and walk away and think that it's going to magically, you know, solve itself.
And that is actually point number two: create space for best thinking among your team. Create space or develop the skill of being a great thinker for your team. Help your team to develop that skill. Create space for best thinking among your team. Too often we promote groupthink without even realizing it. And one of the things, you know, when I pastored was kind of the frustration is that, you know, we would have board and business meetings. The church that I pastored was really a democratic type of church. And so all decisions had to go through boards and committees and all of that stuff. You can imagine how that looks. And so oftentimes what would happen, and this is why it's so important for your team to develop the skills of being great thinkers, or for you to help your team to develop the skill of being a great thinker, is because what would happen is they would come to these meetings and then they would try to solve problems without having even thought about the problem. So it just then you just have whoever is the most influential, whoever has the largest personality, whoever is, and unfortunately, whoever is the most immature, and by immature is the one who is willing to do whatever it takes to win, then that's the direction that the organization would go. And this is how it operates in many organizations that function kind of in a democratic way. But that happens because the leader does not do two things, does not train his team on how to think, and then does not challenge them to think. So one of the things that I encourage leaders to do is rather than in meetings throwing out a problem and then having a conversation about it, because again, a lot of times personality and relationships will dominate that. What I suggest is either in the meeting or individually to throw out the problem and ask the individual or individuals to think about it. Let's not even discuss it right now. I really want you to think about it. And then over time, so let's say, for instance, and I'm going to talk to my pastors or whatever, or executive directors and board leaders of nonprofits. All right, here is the challenge that we're having, and I want to hear your best thinking around it. And we're going to come back at our next meeting, and we're going to really think through how this thing functions. And then as a leader, I'm in contact with them. So again, I'm doing training, helping to train them to develop this skill, but then I'm in contact with them. I'm interested in hearing, what is your thinking so far? And I'm not listening to them for the purpose of trying to persuade their thinking. So even when they ask me, Dr. Davis, what are your thoughts around this? I simply say things such as, you know, actually, I'm calling because I really wanted to hear your thoughts. It's more important to me in this conversation to hear what your thinking is, because I really want to learn and to understand the issue a lot better.
And I think that's an, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please.
No, I think that's just a, that is an incredible point that you make, in the sense that you are giving people the opportunity to engage and practice in the skill of thinking. And it also helps because they're, and you mentioned this as well, the personality types. A lot of extroverts will be quick to come up with solutions and ideas and are fine with thinking off the cuff and brainstorming out loud. And for a lot of that personality type, thinking is this process of talking, talking through things, you know, talking it out loud, just running through all kinds of scenarios. But more introverted people take a different approach. They definitely like to kind of sit with this, think about it. They would do better, you know, coming back to the meeting later with their thoughts as they've kind of collected them. So your point is you've got to give people the chance to get in the reps to be better thinkers. And I'm just adding in here that both the extroverted and introverted personality types need that opportunity to especially I think the extroverts need that opportunity to just sit back and really critically assess and come back at a later time to show that they've been thinking.
And another skill set of great leadership is not coming up with the right solutions all the times, but coming up with the right questions. So for instance, you put out to the team, now you're doing that follow-up with the team that I was just talking about a moment ago with various team members. You're saying, you know, I want to hear your thinking about it. And they're sharing with you their thinking, and knowing the right questions to ask, not questions that are going to lead them into your thinking, but questions that legitimately will help to clarify for them, so that when we do come back and have that group conversation, and by the way, the group conversation is so important, but those group conversations are best had when individuals have had the opportunity to think, rather than everyone in the room just shooting off the cuff. And like you said, the more dominant personalities, the people who are more extrovert, type A, as we call it, personalities, are the ones that end up, you know, controlling the conversation. But when I'm having those offline conversations, you know, asking, well, one of the things that I was thinking about was, how will that impact the prices of X, Y, and Z? Or how would we then get our insurance down a little bit, you know, at that level that we talked about, we want to pay for insurance? You see where I'm coming from? I'm not telling that they're right or wrong. I'm just asking questions to say, well, you know, how will we consider this? How will that impact, you know, the members on the team over here and things like that? So now asking the right questions will also help to develop stronger thinking skills among our team. So being intentional in our trainings, you know, we train about everything. Sometimes, you know, people get frustrated about all the meetings that we have in various organizations. But one of the trainings that is so valuable is the training of helping people to think. And then as a leader, asking those type of questions that will continue to spark deep thinking among our team.
Let's take one more point, and I didn't mention it earlier in the beginning of the show. This is going to be a two-part series, so I want to take one last point before we wrap up this show and pick it up in the next show. But kind of moving into that, how does that play into our competence as a leader? Does this demonstrate our competence when we're able to start doing? Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah. And so that is the third point. The third point is you are responsible to strive to be as competent in your job as possible. That's right. And I see that there was a little mix up here. I apologize for that, everyone. So create a space for best thinking among your team.
Yeah, we dealt with that. So we just dealt with it a little bit. And it's just actually good because now we're four in and we can tackle that and have time for the next show. So let's just jump right into it.
Okay, so here we go. Number four is strive to be as competent in your job as possible. And one of the things, and that is, and when we talk about competence in your job, it's twofold. Competent in how you show up in relationships. And that goes back to some of the things we're talking about, the thinking, training others how to think. I remember last week, Beth Yoey made a very important point that just really resonated with me, which is to model the type of relationships that we want other team members to have with each other. So being clear and intentional about how we want to have relationships with others and being competent in that. Having competency in dealing with extroverts, introverts, those who are contrary and antagonistic, you know, how do I manage myself in those relationships? Having that competency. And then, of course, and you know, this just goes without saying, you know, actually know what your job is, how to do it, and to do it well. You know, things such as showing up on time for meetings, following up. I remember just this, I had an experience some time ago where an email was sent to one of our children's school personnel. I'll make it very vague, school personnel. And they just never responded. They didn't even respond to say a simple, hey, you know, school is just starting. We've been overwhelmed. You know, the one of those cut and paste emails that you could send out. School just starting. We will get back to you as soon as possible. Matter of fact, good thing about most email platforms is you can just make that an auto reply. But, you know, the little things like that, replying to emails, replying to telephone calls, not just the calls of the people who you want to speak with, but all the folk. And then again, whatever your job is, if you're an accountant, you know, be effective and be competent at being an accountant. If part of your job is engaging with the community, then actually, you know, get to know the leaders in the community, actually make those calls, engage with them. I don't want to be insulting here, but being actually competent and proficient at what your job is as a leader.
I think there's nothing more debilitating or demoralizing than having to engage with and having to report to a leader who is incompetent in some critical areas. You started off by talking about impersonal relationships, and Beth really made that great point about how you need to model your behavior. So many times in my experience, I have seen where interpersonal relationships on a team just make the lives of those individuals absolutely miserable when they have to come to work, and the leader is not demonstrating competence in dealing with that. And it's just either they don't know how to deal with, they don't have the skills, or maybe they just have an attitude that's not something that I'm going to deal with, whatever the case may be. That kind of situation makes people just feel like nothing's ever going to change. The leader doesn't care. They're not going to do anything about it. So even when you get to that point where you're saying, well, I talked to this person and they sent me a very demeaning email. They're always speaking to me in a way to where they think that I'm beneath them. You know, we get back and forth on these, going back and forth, basically our egos are getting in the way. And you say, well, you talk to the manager, talk to the leader. Nothing's ever going to change. They don't do anything about it. This sinks more ships in an organization than yeah. anything. Develop that competence. It is important that leaders, that you are responsible. I mean, this is my take on it. I am, as a leader, I'm responsible for the happiness and the health of my team. And if I need to be able to be as competent as possible, I can't change them, but I can give them tools and I can model that behavior that I expect for them to have with each other as well.
And that's so I, and yeah, let me just say this last thing, because this is going to really set us up for our next point. And I'll just end right here. In essence, what we're saying with all of these various points is the importance of being a continual learner. One of the things I love about audiobooks is that when you're driving, you can put these books on and listen. I know we like to listen to music and stuff, but man, you know, great leaders are always reading. They're always seeking to become, to learn more. and to be better at what they do. And so when we talk about competence, you know, one of the ways that we increase our competence is by becoming lifelong learners, by never saying I am the best. I have reached my, you know, I've reached my plateau. I've come to the top of the mountain. I have no further to go. No, but actually being a lifelong learner improves our competency. Learning other areas, you know, outside of what our field is, outside of what we enjoy. You know, I'm doing a lot of history reading now. I don't like history like that, but I want to become more competent. I want to learn how other great leaders thought. I'll never forget when I finished reading the book, Frederick Douglass's autobiography. I just realized how small I was standing next to great giants. But I was inspired to say, you know what? If a former slave could make this type of impact on the world, then I have an opportunity to make an impact on the world as well. But these type of things take place when we read these autobiographies, when we read, relative to our jobs, our performances, when we read other material and expand our thinking. It really does help us to be more competent in every area of our executive functioning, as well as our interpersonal relationship functioning.
One of my favorite books, I recommend that book to a lot of my white friends as well, the autobiography of Frederick Douglass. And because it's so short, it's a great book. And I've recommended that to a couple of people. I recommended that to a friend of mine who was a Civil War buff. And he just loves all he read was Civil War stuff. I said, you got to check this book out. He said it completely changed his perspective on the Civil War, completely changed everything. And it just reshaped his understanding of basically the historical narrative around that. But we'll leave it there. But you say that book and it just jumped out at me. So at any rate, we're at step number four on these seven things that a leader has to do to affect cultural change in a healthier workplace. We're going to pick it up in our next show. Be sure to visit our website, www.unboxedtolead.com, to learn more about what we do and to find resources around this very topic and learn more about our leaders' peer support community and all the things that we're doing. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxedtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number two, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number two, lead.com.
Next show intro here.